Hello and welcome to LSE Share Talks Conker's Corner. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Gordon Watson, otherwise known as Flash. Gordon is an ex-professional football player who played for several clubs, ranging from Charlton, Sheffield Wednesday, Southampton, Bradford City, Bournemouth, Portsmouth and Hartlepool. Gordon, I find it difficult to explain this to many people, but as a football player, lots of footballers go out of football and then the monies that they had, they squander. You've gone from football to investing. Hello, Gordon. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Good morning.
So, mate, I want you to explain to me how you made this huge transition, really, from being a football player, a good football player, must I add, and we'll talk about that in a minute. You represented England in the 21s, and you also then have moved into the city, doing a bit of wheeling and dealing, and making a fair chunk of change for yourself in the world of investing.
Listen, there's many a story, you know what I mean? It's one of them where you learn by mistakes along the way, really. It's only been sort of the last 3 or 4 years that I've realised that investing is not the same as gambling.
Yes.
When I first came out of football, I had all the three main attributes for disaster, which was time, place and money.
Yes.
And I had a really bad, I am a compulsive gambler who doesn't gamble, you know.
Right,
so
okay.
The investing point of view for me was, I'm happy, it's locked away. I have good people around me.
Yeah.
And I don't chase. So yeah, it's a good way for me to sort of make money and have safe investments.
Right, so the people around you helped you to become more disciplined, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically, yeah. When I left football, I thought I knew it all, and now I understand I knew very little. I take guidance from people, and I listen a lot more. So when you listen and you take it on board, then it does definitely help you.
No, I think that's great. So you had time out of football to have that time to reflect and find your centre as such.
Yeah, basically, I mean, when I first came out of football, I just was like a runaway train on a self-destruct mission because I had so much time, money, and none of it really had a value because it was easy come, easy go.
Yeah.
And then when you hit that downside, I mean, I've been clean of gambling for like maybe just over 8 years now.
Right,
and,
excellent.
And it's the best thing I've ever done.
Brilliant.
Now, And that's really, really helped with my investment strategy, is because I don't go running around chasing. And also, I'm happy when others win, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't run around looking for spikes. So I know that if the companies I'm invested in have the right fundamentals, then I'm going to be all right long term, maybe sometimes short term. But the bottom line is that I know that I'm in the right place at the right time.
Excellent, excellent. Now, Gordon, I'm going to backtrack a little bit because I, a lot of my professional career, I was working with children for social services and social care, and working with children in children's homes and so on and so forth. Now, if you don't mind me touching on this.
No, not at all.
It says in your bio, I've been doing obviously a bit of research on yourself, and for you, I think you'd be a great role model to be going back into these children's home and looked after services, because it says here you grew up in London, you were a child that was put into a children's home for a period of time, and you've gone from that to being a professional football player. Yeah You took your comic, if this is correct, I'm sure it is, your comic book hero was Flash Gordon, and that's where you got your name. Fantastic journey, mate.
Yeah, I mean, listen, everything's sent to try you, shapes
yes.
you.
Yeah.
I didn't give myself the Flash Gordon. Basically, being blonde hair, blue eyes, name was Gordon. People just called me Flash,
yes,
and it stuck.
Yeah.
Really. Now, there's two edges to that, because I'm actually Gordon Watson, not
yeah.
Flash, but yeah. Everyone knows me as that. And I was encouraged to try and get away from that nickname, because with nickname comes a little bit of. A little bit of immaturity, if you like.
Yes.
And obviously I was trying to grow up, because I was like Peter Pan. I was doing the same thing when I was 32 that I did when I was 6 or 7, and that was kick a ball around.
Yes, yes,
so,
of course.
So that transition from being like a Peter Pan to being a grown-up with responsibilities of being a father, it took its toll, and it took its time to actually adjust.
Yeah, no, I understand that. So you went, obviously, you signed for Southampton for $1.2 million, mate. That must have been a big turning point for you as a young lad.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that was on the back of having four of the best years in Sheffield Wednesday's history, you know.
Yes, yes.
From 91 to 95, we was probably one of the top three teams in the country. We played in Europe, finished in the top three of the Premier League, or basically, and it was just cup finals. It was just everything anyone would want to dream about. And then I had to stand on my own two feet and go to Southampton, because with Sheffield, I started losing my sort of self-discipline off the pitch. Because it was such a wonderful party city. I mean, it was like I could have been out 8 nights a week, and it was almost, you go back to what you said earlier about being in a children's home and being having a care order.
Yeah.
I had nothing, absolutely nothing.
So no structure whatsoever.
I had nothing as in material.
Oh, right. Okay.
So basically football, it was an escapism for me.
Yeah, it gave you everything. Yeah,
it was the all or nothing, which again later on in life is sort of a destructive trait to have.
Yes.
If you go down the wrong path.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, I've gone to Sheffield Wednesday, who one of the biggest teams in the country, one of the best cities in the world, in my view.
Yeah.
And I was like a kid in a candy store.
Right.
I was basically wanting to be out all the time. I was basically wanting, if there was anything going on, good or bad, then I wanted to have a part of it, because I'd never done anything like that.
Yeah, that was the euphoria that you'd never had as a younger child. You were fixing all the holes and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And again, the all or nothing is just something that I've actually tried to get away from. And I'd say that I'm probably in a better place now than I've ever been.
No, that's fantastic, mate. So you made your home debut for Saints in I think it was around March 95. The down 1-0, and if this is correct, mate, it was like 89 minutes in, they were 1-0 down. You scored, the team won 3-1, catalyst for them staying up. They're almost, you know, guaranteed to be relegated that season.
Yeah, we finished 10th. We finished 10th that season. We were third when I joined.
Yes, third from bottom.
Third from bottom, and we beat Newcastle 3-1.
Yes.
And then from there on, Alan Ball was our manager, so World Cup Willie. Much
really
respect.
Really nice guy, yeah.
Brilliant. Matt Letizia was one of our shining lights.
Shining lights then, yeah.
Just give him the ball and then something will happen. And we ended up finishing 10th in the Premier League with a really young squad, really young.
Because Tiz was only young then, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's only 2 years older than me, so Tiz would have been about 24, 25.
Yeah, and that's when he was not carrying any timber.
Well, yeah, but even when he carried timber, listen, the thing is what they say about Tiz, because he was so relaxed and glided over the ground, he did a lot more running than most people think.
Yeah.
No, it was good times, and then Bally left. And when he left,
sad.
Yeah, the whole structure started wobbling around a little.
Right, okay, but I take it now. I mean, I see your tweets, and it's clear that, you know, even though you had your best years at Sheff Wednesday and you went to Bournemouth and went to Portsmouth as well and Hartlepool, that Saints is your team. How did Saints become the team for you?
Basically, because I moved here in 95.
Right.
Never moved away. My children are both born here.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, in my heart, Sheffield Wednesday is where I want all my teams to do well.
Yeah, of course.
But for me, looking back as a professional footballer, I mean, Sheffield Wednesday, I was lucky enough to spend 4 and a bit years.
Yeah.
And it was the best time in their history.
Yeah.
So, and Southampton is just one of them places that when I signed, Alan Ball said, you'll never move away. And God rest his soul, he was 100% correct.
Yeah. No, he was a fantastic guy. He was a real gent as well, from what I've seen in interviews with him and so on and so forth.
Yeah, top man.
No, brilliant. Now, I'm just going to ask one. I'm going to try and get away from football, because I know a lot of our people listening to this podcast are going to go, oh, come on, guys, you're meant to be talking about shares and Gordon's investing. But the thing I've read here, Gordon, please tell me if it's correct, that when you were at Bradford and got promoted in June 99, you were like, you know what, I've had these injuries, I don't feel fit enough. I don't feel good enough to go into the top flight of the football league, so I'm not going to take a contract. Is that true?
No, not really. Yes, it's true that I said them words.
Yes.
But I was protecting somebody else, because if the truth had come out, then it would have been very embarrassing for that individual.
Okay, well, we won't touch on that anymore. Let's get into your investing bit then. Yeah.
Yeah, lovely.
So you're saying basically 3 or 4 years ago, you started and you thought, right, okay, you had some good people around you, put a shoulder around you, said, look, mate, come on, you've got your family, you've got yourself to look after, you're a young guy, let's sort things out. What was it that someone said that particular week, that month, that you thought, you know what, this now makes sense, I need to now look at investing and look for the long term?
I think the biggest thing for me was that when I almost liken it that being like a control freak, and I've always got to have my hands on the steering wheel.
Yes.
Whereas I've been able to trust some other entity to basically guide me, and I take my hands off the wheel and let them do the driving for a bit, you know. Yeah. I'm still that compulsive, obsessive character that will then go to the nth degree to do research and then more research, because that's just the way that I am. No. But it was one of them where I knew that it was locked away. I couldn't really touch it, and then you go from there.
Okay, so you've had time to reflect. You've gotten in. You've handed over a certain level of trust, which again is outside of your comfort zone.
Yes.
So you're attracted, obviously, because you want to give security for yourself and your family long term. Yeah.
Yeah, and maximize returns. Really.
Maximize returns. Yeah. So
exactly.
So 3 or 4 years ago then, you've given a little bit of control to another entity. You've had time to just calm the situation down a little bit. You've made your first investment, Gordon. What was that?
My first investment would have been Bushveld Minerals, and that would have been about, probably 2012, November.
Yep.
Absolutely jumped in feet first, loved did my homework. Yep. But the good thing is, obviously, I'm a Shard client, Shard stockbrokers.
Yep, Shard, yeah.
And they guide or recommend 99.9% of the stocks that I go into.
Right, okay.
Which is brilliant for me. And then I go away and I do more research. But the beauty I have with them is that they put on a facility where I can sit around a boardroom table and ask the questions that are in my mind straight into the CEO or the MD. So there's no emails. I actually get the tone of their voice. I can look in their eyes.
Yeah.
And nothing's watered down. And the bottom line is, it's my money going into them. I'm a shareholder. They're working for me. That's my attitude. They are working for my money.
Yeah.
So, and I think that it's priceless, that opportunity.
Well, that's a fantastic facility. I'm not sure how many other brokers actually do that to that extent, but that's something that is definitely a niche and should be a benefit to all people that are putting money to work with companies.
Well, it's been a massive benefit for me personally. I have a lot of friends that are also now Shard clients, and they're seeing the benefits as well, because I've actually, don't get me wrong, I come out of some of their meetings and I've not liked what I've heard. And I've said to Shard, I want out.
Yeah.
And simple as that. And then, but what you do is you listen. And this is the biggest thing that I never used to do. I listen a lot more.
Yes.
Take it on board. Yeah. And I know that they're obviously a good company because I'm sitting at the table and I'm listening.
Yes.
But the timing might not be right for my strategy. In which case, I'm not going to go and put some money into a company and then see it then build for the next 18 months, but the share price not move.
Yes. Yeah.
I might as well log everything. Again, being compulsive, my memory is very good.
Yeah.
So I have timings of when companies are going to be ready for my investment.
Right. So you're looking for the potential catalyst. So you say you log everything. Do you have your diary and somewhere you keep a record of what you've done, how you've done it?
Obviously, I have everything documented.
Yeah.
But I also have a watch list of about 40 companies.
Yes.
And I'll keep an eye on volume, and I'll keep an eye on the fundamentals and make sure that they're improving or going the way they're expected.
Yes.
But the biggest thing I find with AIM is the sentiment's got to be right.
Yes.
So yeah. So now, I mean, I came away from Bushveld Minerals, but I still would want to be with them in the future.
Yes.
Now, they're still building a company on many levels, but I prefer to be with companies that are near-term production or
yes.
in production
yep.
because you can't get away from a company that are actually bringing money in. I'm
yep.
not one of these that will invest in a company and if, but, maybe, because
yep.
that's gambling.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in any of that, and all of my stocks that I'm in currently are near-term production or production.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into the stocks that you're involved in a bit later on. I'm going to ask this question. I think I know the answer to this. I've been spoken to you when we met in Warsaw a little while ago. As an investor, would you describe yourself as low risk, long term investor, or you know, relatively trend following?
No, I don't follow. It's hard because what defines trends? You know, I'm definitely one of the. I'm flexible, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll move very quickly. I have no, again, being a compulsive gambler, I have no emotion over any investment ever. And I look at cycles, definitely
yeah.
look at cycles.
Yeah.
And I know that when you want to be in a certain area. Now, it's been a really bad time the last 3 or 4 years for miners.
Yes, of course.
And precious metals.
Yeah.
So now if you look at a cycle over the last, say, 20 years, the gold... biggest price in 2011.
Yeah.
So your next one's going to be 2016. So I would definitely want to be around precious metals and gold and mining companies again in 2016.
Okay. So that's mainly the sector that you're in then, is mining and resources. Is that oil? Does that include oil as well, I take it?
Well, it did. It did.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously I was in 88E from the very beginning,
yeah.
Which is obviously a massive success story this year.
Massive,
and
yeah.
And the funny thing is, and this is where research really, really does help, because I was in a company called Red Emperor last year that
yeah.
went from, I don't know, probably about 1.6, maybe 2 pence up to over 5.
Yes.
And they basically did a farming with a company called Otto. So I did my research on Otto.
Yeah.
Otto then took me to Alaska. Alaska then took me to Eagle Ford.
Yes.
Eagle Ford took me to Paul Baczynski. Paul
yeah.
Baczynski then took me to 88E. So, and then I found that that was where I wanted to be because of the people behind it.
Yeah. This is the beauty of research that so few people understand, in a sense that they have to put the time in. And they think if they see somebody that they know on Twitter or in a bulletin board or somebody on a tip sheet or a magazine say, this is the stock to buy, there's a small paragraph on the company, that's condensed piece of writing, but it doesn't give you the minutiae detail that you actually need to make it, you know, to put your money behind the company. So important. That's fantastic research, that, Gordon.
Yeah, and then what it does is it gives you confidence.
Confidence,
and,
yes. Yeah.
And then what you do is, and this is what I do with Shard. I put an investment together
yeah.
for a particular company. I then go away. And depending on timing, depending on sentiment,
yeah.
I then top up. I top up regardless whether that share price goes up
yeah.
or it goes down.
Yeah.
And you'll have some fundamentals. And we'll go on to a couple of my stocks in a while, I guess.
Yes,
but
we will, yeah.
When some investments make money, I'll take that profit out and I won't go looking elsewhere. I will bring that back and put it into one of my fundamental companies.
Yeah. So when you say fundamental, you keep some core companies in your portfolio at all times. Are they fundamental ones? Or
yeah,
what you've researched that are fundamentally
doubt, yeah.
strong?
Yeah, the ones that are making money,
yeah.
undervalued, under
yes.
the radar. And this is the other thing that I personally think that all private investors, they have a responsibility to share the information, the knowledge, and that gains traction and sentiment, because there's so many companies out there and they all want to tell a good story.
Yeah.
But so many of them don't let the truth get in the way of that good story.
You're being polite there, Gordon, aren't you?
I am, yeah, very much so. But touch wood that I've not experienced any of that with any of the companies that I've ever been involved in.
Yeah.
But again, I've got to take my hat off to the guidance I had from Shard.
Yeah, they've filtered through a lot of the noise for you and the other companies that I think the phrase being coined now is lifestyle companies, yeah?
Yes, very much so. Yeah. But see, I like the fact that there is so many companies out there, and there are so many good ones.
Yes.
And yeah. I'm one of these believers. I've always been obviously a team player coming from my background.
Yes, indeed.
But yeah. I like the fact that with social media taking more of a front row seat now on an information portal, the ramping, people say about ramping, and yeah, it's an ugly word if you're ramping a wrong company.
Yes.
So many companies have great fundamentals, but if you don't have an audience,
yeah,
then it's pointless, because the bottom line is they're going to have to invest in that company for you to get any sort of uplift. And then, and then obviously, you make sure that the company's fundamentals back up the story. Yeah. So you can step away. That's why I'm always happy, and I'm fortunate enough to not have trolls or jealous people coming on Twitter and dogging any of the shares. Because go on in, go and do your own homework and see if you come back with any negatives. They don't do it.
I mean, this is the great thing about what we're trying to do at LSE Share Talk. As you know, we're trying to make it a level playing field. We're trying to get the information out there. We're not tipping anything. We're just saying, look, here's the information. Here's an interview with the CEO or the CFO. Digest it. Make your own decision. You know, and a lot of other avenues that you could have, they're saying, this is going to zero. This is going to £10. It's like so polarized. It's either one extreme to the next, feast or famine. And all we're saying is, there's the information. Take it, do what you want with it, and that's it.
Yeah. I'm rubbish with prices. I'm absolutely rubbish. but I'm all right with most of them, well, none of them have gone south. So I have an upside in my portfolio in every stock. So something's going right, but I wouldn't confess to you that I know when to get out, because a lot of shares that I've taken good profits on have kept going up, which is great. Great for everyone, because this is another thing that I'm so happy when people do so well, because that money's going to have to find a new home.
Yes.
When it finds a new home, like 88E this year, the catalyst that's given people, one, it's given them wealth. It's also given them a chance to diversify their portfolios right across the board. And that drips down into, so that's money going into other companies that wouldn't normally do so. So for me, I'm so pleased when people make money.
No, that's great. Well, let's start talking about some of those stocks. Let's carry on talking there, Gordon, regarding 8AT. When you got in it, what price, when you started top slicing, etc. Should we start there?
Yeah, you can do. You can do, because it's quite an ugly story, to be honest.
The thing is about being a contrarian and deep research is sometimes you have to buy ugly. You have to, the old saying about make the trade that makes you puke. Sometimes you have to do that. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Listen, mine were, I'll just call it as it is. Basically, I got in at, I think it was about 0.5, maybe 0.55. Saw it drop to, obviously the price of oil dropped by a third. So likewise, and obviously the uncertainty with 88E, but I knew that the fundamentals were great. And I had some help with people on Twitter as well, so we could bounce off. I started topping up and getting in a bit more around 0.3.
Yeah.
I sold some at 0.35.
Brilliant.
The night that I sold at 0.35, news broke in Australia.
Oh, yes.
And it spiked that day. I think it went up to about 0.85.
Wow.
Which was massive.
Yeah.
But the majority of my funds were already out of there. So I bought back in at 0.81 or something.
Yeah.
I then sold that next tranche at 0.12. At 1.2.
Yeah.
And then it went up to 3 point something. But I got in again at 1.7 and sold at 3.8. So listen, there was a lot of upside for me.
But I
did miss the jackpot. Although in some people's eyes, making the amount that I made in a short space of time was like a jackpot anyway.
Sometimes it's about having a look back really at the percentage return as a total, you know, and you have to commend yourself that you were able to do the research in the first place to actually identify it at the beginning, and you know, you de-risk when other people were actually starting to buy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, see let's go right back to the beginning. I don't gamble.
Yeah.
So when there's an upside and there's profit to be taken,
yeah,
I take the profit.
Yes. Yeah.
Straight away.
Yeah.
Straight away. I de-risk.
Yeah.
So, and I make sure that if it wants to keep going, it can keep going, but it's not going to have a fleet of ships behind it. It will just have maybe one or two, you know?
Yes. Yeah. No, that's brilliant. So which stock do you want to talk about next? You want to go on to Keras? Well,
we've got to go Keras, haven't we?
Yeah, go Keras.
Got to go. I've been championing this company right back from the Ferrex days. I'm close to Dave Reeves. I've basically helped with PR on this company to get it out there, because it is a small fledgling company who have diversified away from the manganese in Togo, which is still sitting there waiting, which would have been a company maker. But obviously, with the way that Dave and his team have gone away from the manganese because of the price, and found a niche, and this is the beauty of it, found a niche of going in Western Australia, number one place in the world for gold. The Norton Goldfields of basically any sort of editorial has been proclaimed as being number one. Yes. And they've gone in and they've done many deals so that they can go and dig the gold out because they're not being used, and give a royalty to the owners. And so CapEx is virtually
zero.
The biggest thing about Keras, away from the fundamentals of the resources and that, is that our biggest shareholder is Dave Reeves.
I know. I love that. I love the fact he's got so much skin in the game, and he speaks so passionately about the importance of backing companies that have got management who have got monies behind the company and in the company.
Yeah, well, if we just say there's 1.3 billion shares in Keras.
Yeah.
After directors, friends, family, and over 3%ers, there's only about 24% of the company in free float. And the majority of them, and I would bring myself to be one of them,
that
I would be sticky. And they went down to 0.37 last year at one stage, and I just could not get enough. It was just because I knew where the company was going.
Yes.
I had total faith. Yeah. I wasn't sidetracked.
Yes.
And now we're seeing the fruits of they have delivered. They'll continue to deliver. Mm-hmm. But also, the timing of going to gold was November.
Yeah.
The gold price low over the last 5 years was December the 11th.
That's pretty good timing, isn't it?
Well, the investing is all about the timing.
Yeah.
And so basically, we started the 5-year upturn in gold, I believe, on December the 12th.
Okay. I mean, the Oz price of gold is outstripping everybody else, isn't it? What's going on there?
Well, the economics for Australia is that they've got a very weak dollar.
The weak dollar, right, okay.
Yeah. Obviously, everyone then wants to find a safe haven.
Yes.
Safe haven with the cycle that's now going to be coming into play and gain momentum is going to be Australian gold. Now, I mean, it's up from, I think it was $1,716 on Monday. It closed at $1,750. I know that it's no more than $1,200 before we see profit for KRS.
Yeah.
And that's top heavy as well. That will only come down.
Yeah.
So KRS have probably made around £50 an ounce of gold this week alone.
That's pretty good.
On top of their projections, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
No, so their profits are gaining profits.
Okay, no, that's exceptional. But I must say, when I first met Dave, I thought he's so laid back, so relaxed. You know, you meet CEOs and they're quite stuffy and they're like unapproachable. He was like, "Yeah, what are you guys talking about?" And I was like, "Oh, we thought we'd have to come over to you to talk to you." He was like, "No." And it was just very, very refreshing. Very refreshing speaking with him.
Well, that's because, again, he when he talks, the fundamentals behind him, he can step out of the way and they back him up.
Yes, yeah.
And another question, Pete, would be, okay, how much skin in the game? He's got more than anyone.
Yeah, I know. What I was going to say to you was, I got the impression, right, and this may be wrong because I didn't have long enough to talk to him, is that he's an investor. Some people are just CEOs. You get what I'm getting, Gordon?
Yeah, well, unbelievably, he knows what's coming.
Yeah.
And it's not insider, but he has faith in his own ability.
Yeah.
And also the options that have come along. And again, we've just had a placing at 1.1p. Remember, three months ago, they were at 0.5 pence.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's like 125% uplift for a placing that has now completely funded, and this is what placings are for. Placings are a dirty, horrible world.
Yes,
in the majority of cases, but when done properly, and that's what they're set out to do.
Yes, they did do
fund
it really well.
Productions.
Yeah.
Raised 1.25 million. That by the end of this year will be bringing back in $1 million a month.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Well, that's exactly what you'd want to do, because in 12 months time that placing has gone up 1,200%.
Staggering. No, that's
fantastic. And that's the beauty because there's no downside. The gold's there, it just needs to be dug out.
Yeah.
And the price, and everyone in the world are saying that the gold price is going up.
So yeah,
you've got near enough no capex. And you just can dig it out, take it to the mill, and everything's set up, because obviously the Norton Goldfields is historically one of the best places on earth.
Yes.
For the infrastructure.
Indeed, yeah. Got everything there.
Because of the economic downturn in Australia, and the places that now Keres are actually involved with, there's trucks that are not being used.
Yeah,
there are miners that haven't got work. There are mills that are got 60% capacity vacant.
Yeah.
So you go in, basically it's just an unbelievable perfect storm.
Yeah.
Tributes are for 5 years. I know that Dave will be looking to extend that.
Yeah, no, they've got a very great, brilliant long-term story ahead of them there. And Dave knows that neck of the woods like the back of his hand. So yeah, definitely one to be looking out for. Is there one other stock you want to talk about here, Gordon?
Yeah, JLP.
Okay, go for it.
I was in JLP last year at 1.6.
Yeah.
I got out at 4.9.
Yeah.
And I got out because I felt that it was overbought, and obviously the profits were sitting there. I knew that long term they were great, but I got a feeling that the majority of people that were investing in JLP were investing for the wrong reasons. They weren't really listening. They were thinking that there was a mining license or mining permit due.
Yep.
Which we know is all of a sudden that's out of your hands.
Yeah.
So I could never invest in a company that was basically involved and waiting on somebody else doing their job, especially when you bring in South Africa.
Right, of course, with the geopolitics and stuff like that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I didn't want to be anywhere near that. And obviously with the upside, I came out 100%.
Okay.
I then obviously got to speak to Leon face to face.
Yeah.
I got to see the progress that they'd made. I took part in the placing at about 2.85.
Yeah.
Again, through Shard. But knowing where they're going, knowing what they've got, knowing that they're already in production and production's only going to go bigger and quickly,
mm-hmm.
that it's a place that I 100% want to be. Now, Leon's words to me were that we could easily be the eighth biggest producer in the world. Wow. They've got Mitsubishi on board. They've got another project called Hernik, and that will propel them. And we're talking double figures, millions profit per annum. Now, with a market cap of around 30 million, then again, it's a safe haven. Precious metals, again, platinum price going through.
Yeah.
Good connections, good working relationships with majors and obviously Mitsubishi. So again, it's somewhere that I would definitely want to be. And we've just started to see, remember, these were at 5.3p last year.
Yes, they were, weren't they? Yeah.
And I think they traded around 3.25 to 3.3p on Friday afternoon. So there's an 80% uplift before you get to the price they were last year.
Yeah.
Without the increase in fundamentals and money coming in each month.
No, that's good. Could I just ask one question, though, regarding the platinum situation? The use of platinum in cars and for catalytic converters and all the rest of it, is there any sort of headwind there?
Well, I think that there will be news coming out shortly to sort of let us know where and what. But the news that came out, I think, on Monday was that the chrome tailings.
Yes, chrome, that's the element,
Yeah, which is another part of it, which will be, it's basically going to be produced over the resource estimate and the projections.
Yeah.
And they are, I don't know if it's like pressure, but they want more, basically.
Oh, right, okay. There's a demand for that.
There's a pressure on JLP to produce more. And with the facilities and the work that they've done behind the scenes, JLP will be able to facilitate that. And that's what will propel them into being one of the top eight in the world.
Okay, well, Gordon, thank you ever so much for sharing that those three shares with us, Keras, ASAT and JLP. It's clear that you're a man who's very, very passionate about the stocks that you're buying. It's your hard-earned money. You're looking to make a good and long return on them. And it's clear that you do your research absolutely thoroughly. And I can't say any more to anybody out there that's listening to this recording. Research is vital. Research is important. And that's what Gordon's hammering home there.
Now, and sharing it, Peter.
And sharing it, yes, of course.
I mean, listen, people say it's ramping. It's not. It's sharing. Don't do your own research after it's been brought to your attention. And if it's been brought to your attention by the right person, then give it a bit of credit.
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree with you completely. Now, we've talked about those couple of shares. What has been your greatest lesson you've attained, Gordon, since you started invested?
Patience.
Okay, great.
And if you know and you've done the right research, don't be frightened by a share price going down, because I think it was Warren Buffett once said that money passes from the impatient to the patient.
Yes.
I like that. It's never been more true with KRS. When I know it was at 2p once, went down to 0.4, and I couldn't get enough of the stock because the fundamentals were and are right.
So, listen,
if it goes down and you know what's coming, as in the fundamentals are right, then load up. Don't go searching. Never look for a spike. Never, ever chase a spike.
Good advice. Brilliant advice. Right. What has been your wisest investment decision to date?
KRS. KRS, yeah.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. It's gotta be.
I actually thought you were going to say it was about listening to other people, whereas before you were you in your own words, controller.
I thought you meant monetary wise.
Well, no, obviously. Personal and investing.
So it's a chicken and egg situation. I suppose the biggest thing for me was joining Shard.
Right, okay. No, good call, good decision. Okay, given the lessons you've learned since you started investing, which one would you most like to share? Which lesson has been your greatest lesson?
I would say trust your research.
Yep.
Trust your research. And don't be frightened to ask questions. But I would definitely say that, again, I'm in a fortunate position because I get to sit at a boardroom table and ask questions.
That's fantastic, Liz,
Yeah, and what I've done is recently, because obviously not everyone can get in, I get questions from other investors.
Ah, that's you sharing your stuff, your opportunities with other people.
Well, of course, because we're all in the same, we've all invested in the same thing. So if I have the facility, this is the bit about the sharing and not seeing it as ramping. If I can get a list of questions from shareholders who haven't got the opportunity that I have, I will go in and ask them questions, not diluted, and I won't dilute or inflate any of the answers. Give it to them straight, because trust, there's a lot of wrong ones out there. Don't get me wrong. But there's also a lot of good.
Yeah. Surround yourself with good people and you can't go wrong, Dave. You know what I mean, Gordon?
Yeah. I don't know who Dave is, so.
Sorry, that's me.
But the big thing is absolutely just trust.
Yeah.
Know who you can trust. And then, listen, it's hard enough game as it is.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
With the way that social media is going, there is an edge coming over, because people can actually share, and the research is there for people. I mean, I have a few people that do research 26 hours a day, and they will post that research, whether you think it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
Take it, read it, and if it's not for you, it's not for you. But I'm never worried about anyone coming on and saying, that's this, that's rubbish, that's it. Because if you know, listen, everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Yes, exactly. Some of those researchers that you're aware of, Gordon, as and when you have the time, mate, if you can direct them my way, I'd love to interview them and get some of their views on how they do their research, what their investing style and strategy is. So please direct them to LSE Share Talk and Conker's Corner. That'd be very kind of you.
We haven't done too bad so far, have you?
No, we're doing all right, mate. We're getting there slowly. But, we've got a long, long journey. And this is about the sharing of information, mate. This is the whole point of the communication portal that Alex McKinley has got going here. And as a team, we're very, very passionate about this idea of sharing, learning, and enabling other investors to actually make good of the monies that they've worked hard for.
Yeah, the clue's in the name.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Right. You may have already answered this already, Gordon. If there was one thing you could change regarding the investing landscape, what would that be?
Market makers' games. Not showing true. Basically, a lot of people, they're blinded by the numbers on the screen, and that's not the case. I mean, again, I think KRS this week at one stage were 115 on the bid, 130 on the ask, and yet you could sell at 124. showing up buys as sells, which again, because it all goes back to the same thing. AIM is sentiment driven. So if you can put buys, if a handful of buys go through, but they go through under mid price because the prices are not properly put on the screen, then they'll come up as red, and you'll and people will be guided thinking there's sellers about. Whereas that's not the case.
That's been raised several times now, and I'm not sure why that still goes on, because you do see that so often, and you're thinking, well, that's not right. You know, I look a lot at volume. So I look at about 10 o'clock in the morning, at 12 o'clock and at 2 o'clock, I'm looking at where the volume has gone in which shares of which I own. And I'm thinking, okay, let's have a look and see whether that's gone past a certain average that I'm watching, and also the percentage for the day to see which way it should be going. And I'm thinking, those are buys, those. So why is that still going on now with the technology that we've got? They know exactly which ones are buys and which ones are not, even though that it's gone at a particular price.
But Pete, there's both sides to the argument, because the thing is, yesterday, the price of a stock that I'm involved in dropped, and I managed to buy a massive load of stock under mid price that then came up red. Gosh. But by the same token as what I've just said to you, is I potentially could have sold maybe 2 weeks ago loads of Keras at 124 when the bid was showing 115.
Right.
So the mid price was 1.22.
Yeah.
So that my sales would have come up blue. So it's both sides. In other words, you ain't got a clue what's a buy. You ain't got a clue what's a sell unless you're the one that's done the buy and done the selling.
Yeah, and you can see the price that, you know, your particular... Because what I tend to do sometimes as well is that I'll buy an odd number that I know no one's going to be using, you know, like 1111 or something daft like that.
Right.
And I can see it straight on the board. That's my purchase. And I see it as a sell when I know I bought. Yeah. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, and this is where the information comes through. There's a lot of good people about on Twitter that what they do is now they'll come on and they'll declare that they've bought.
Very few
come on and say that they've sold. When I think that's just as important, because you're in the game to make money. And if you've sold and made money, why would anyone look at you any differently?
Yeah.
Well, the fundamentals of the company are still the same. Yeah. But people's strategy is completely different.
Exactly.
So I
applaud
those.
And everyone's got in a different price. That's exactly what, spot on.
And it is something that should be applauded and encouraged. Yeah. And if anyone comes on and says they've sold and they've managed to make money, good luck to them.
Yes, agreed. You see my tweets. I put out the tweets that I put when I purchase stuff. And people always question, why have you gone in now? Why are you buying at this price? And it's because I've done my research. I'm happy to buy at this price. It doesn't mean that it's the right price to buy it at. It's just I'm happy to buy now. And equally, when I've come out and I've said, look, I've sold this now. I'm happy with the percentage of return I've made thus far. I may just be top slicing. I may be out completely. But you've got to be happy with your own research and your own strategy, really.
Yeah, and it just needs to be that balance, Pete, if you've bought, you've bought, and if you've sold, you've sold. But if you're happy, and listen, there is a load of sheep, and there is a load of people that invest because they've seen the price go up. But that doesn't mean that the fundamentals are great. It doesn't mean the fundamentals are bad.
Yeah.
Just make sure that you know what you've got.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you there, mate. Definitely. It just goes back to what you said. You started at the very beginning about this, is that the importance of research and the fact that when you do your research and you started in one particular company, as in what happened with you with 8AC, you can almost go around the globe and it's interconnected with other companies and other CEOs, and you end up back full circle. And you may, because you've done such good research, find another gem that you weren't expecting to find, you know?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, 8AE was probably one of only two shares that I've actually picked myself over 4 years.
Wow.
3 or 4 years.
Yeah, excellent. Right. We're going to go back now, almost like you were an apprentice football player, Gordon. And we're going to say to you, right, mate, you're starting out today in investing. What would you do that you'd not considered you were doing or were unable to do back 4 or 5 years ago when you first started investing? What would you do?
I would make sure that I did everything in my powers to know exactly what the company has, where the company's going, get figures out of them, projections, even though they don't like it, because they want to, like, some of them are over promise and under deliver. And then once you've weighed it all up, take a bit of advice from people you trust.
Yes.
Who are close to you.
Yeah.
Which I'm obviously very fortunate with.
Yep.
And then make the decision of what stake goes in.
Good. I love that answer. Now, we've touched on the access that you have got with Shard. I'm not sure if you can declare this or share this, but is there a certain size of portfolio you have to have this level of access to CEOs or CFOs or sitting around looking them in the eye? Is there a particular size of portfolio you've got to have?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. No, I mean, the biggest thing that they've done, in my eyes, is they've found a niche to try and give the private investor a level playing field of being able to sit around a boardroom table, just the same as the institutionals do. And then that gives, as Shard grow, they will be able to take more and more percentage in IPOs, more percentage in placings.
Yeah.
And I think that their attitude is, and I can't speak for them, but from the outside looking in, it's as if they want to get, basically they're happy to have a lick of the knife and not a slice of the pie, you know?
Yes.
So as long as their clients are making money, then they're happy.
Yeah, it's about being fair and not, you have some brokers and some companies out there that are just greedy and they're looking out for themselves almost, aren't they?
Yeah, their main thing, and I can definitely say this, is that it's the clients come first.
Yes, yeah.
And they give them every opportunity the normal man in the street doesn't get. Simple as that, really.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. That. Right. I'm going to try and wrap this up shortly, but I'm going to have to touch back on my passion, which is obviously football. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions regarding the Saints, and obviously they've signed James Prowse, Ward-Prowse, and Forster, should I say, to
Yes.
long-term contracts. So how are you feeling about them going forward next season? Are they going to be pushing ahead with Koeman? Is he staying?
He's got 1 year left, so
Yep.
listen, everything's pointing towards that they're building for the future. Van Dijk also, who's obviously player of the
Signed, yeah,
year,
Virgil, yeah.
there's another one.
Yep.
I think Wanyama's the one that we'd like to really sign because in my eyes he's a top four. I scouted him when he was at Celtic for
Wow,
Leicester.
okay.
I would say that everything's geared up now to go to the next level. The big problem you have with a transitional team like Southampton is that if they play in Europe, they got out of it, luckily enough, early this year.
Yeah.
But you can play an extra 20 games, and if your squad's not right, then you'll be found wanting.
Okie dokie. Right, okay. No, I think that's a good wrap there. We've covered the only thing we haven't covered there is politics, I think. Football, sports, everything. No, that's good, mate. All right, Gordon, that is all, unless you wanted to share something else with me or ask me any sort of questions or anything like that.
No, you're all good, Pete. Thanks for the time.
No, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. That was Gordon Watson, otherwise known as Flash. Ex-footballer, commentator, media legend, and I've been Peter at Conker's Corner. Gordon, thank you, mate. You're a gent. Thank you very much.
More than welcome. Good luck.
Thank you, mate. Bye-bye.